Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Today we're talking about shutting down procrastination and taking your calls for readings. And so we invite you first, before we get to our calls, to join us here on Blog Talk Radio, but more importantly on Facebook and on Twitter. And in fact, we have a new page, the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. If you haven't done so already, please look that page up on Facebook and like it. We appreciate your support. We're still developing the page. We have been very busy lately, so we've got to get more into creating content and things like that. Of course, we post the radio show there, but we're going to have more more information and more, what are we doing on there, Neil?
We want
people to interact. I don't know. We don't know if we're starting a page. I mean, a group as well as a page. I think probably in a group there's more interaction with people. Hopefully we can get people to interact on the page. So we are going to be working on doing that shortly. The phone number to call in today, 914-338-0164. And for further conversation, 562-596-7818. We do have a caller, and I believe this is Gwendolyn. Hello.
Hey, duo. How are you today?
Hi. How are you? What's going on? We've been thinking about you.
I know, and you've been on my mind strongly, too, because all your support through this. Do you believe it's still, we are in it's like the final round. Fast forwarding, we get to a court date, the other side comes up with a lawyer, okay, fast forward, get the signed order. That Friday, that was on a Tuesday, that Friday, my child is not delivered to me as ordered, so fast forward to Monday morning, I let everyone know. Tuesday was also my day with my child, and since he refused to give me my child over the weekend, while I was doing big people mommy stuff, which was introducing myself to my son's school, meeting with the principal, the guidance counselor, and doing all the other goody things, the other side was in a courtroom spilling some ugly untruths, which have now busted open in their face because they lied about something that never occurred in front of all the officials I was with that particular day. So now we're fast forwarding. The case is now being looked at as alienating my child from me and my children. So the judge is having us meet in a courthouse. And on February 4, we will go back to court for the final hoo-ha. So I'm anticipating just an all-board, across-the-board win. This is ridiculous. But can we see that this is going to be the end of this? Because it interferes with my life tremendously. And I just want to go on. Like, this is ridiculous nonsense.
Right. So it sounds like, you haven't seen your children, though, yet. They haven't been.
Finally get hold of my six-year-old, yes, last weekend when I was at the school. And the school helped me transition him into me bringing him back to my home where I live now. And that took place while they were doing, ugly things somewhere else and got caught up, which the universe told me that morning, go do this.
So you took your child to your home?
Yep, I did. And I took pictures of him, and he was happy, and it was really nice to see him. And I was blessed with that opportunity before we had to now face all the truths that are now coming to light on this case. So I'm good with that. we're going to do one more so that the judge can verify this is in fact what has been going on, and it will happen. So we, on my camp, we are not concerned at all. However, on the other side, you know, it's just people going down screaming in silence right now because they're in a lot of trouble. You're lying to Superior Court judges, and you brought another child in the mix to do that. And you are blatantly lying because the officials that you claim this event happened in front of, it never did that day. I was at the school the entire day, and then I stayed nearby until my child.
They lied about something that the court knew, that the court, I mean, where the court knew that you were dealing with, you know, the details of getting your kids back, being at the school and all that. So,
right, he said my child had a reaction at school, and in fact, the child never had a reaction at school because no one ever told him that his mom's been trying to see him all this time. They did not, ex did not go home as ordered, and to tell my son that he was supposed to be spending time with his mother. So the school helped me do that, and I did it legally and within court order.
What kind of reaction are you talking about, Gwendolyn?
Emotional?
He was saying my son wet his pants at school because he didn't want to go with his mom. But what he did not know was that my child was just fine. The school officials helped me. The guidance counselor is the one who transitioned us physically together at the end of the day. My child had no other reaction but willingly got in the Uber with me and came home to my place. But he was a little confused. However, I, you know, sat down with him and we had a small talk. My attorney called to ask me if this was true. My son was sitting there. She told me to ask him while she was on the phone. He said no, but I fell in a mud puddle, and that was the end of that. So the child didn't know. The accident never happened, and I was with the very people who would confirm and witness this. It's terrible to do that to anyone. So it is what it is. His truths are coming to light. It's just in process. But on February 4, I really want this to end. Right now, I'm working with these courts who are interrupting my life. I can't do anything else around these, you know, situations except roll with them and do the best I can, and I'm doing that. However, is this a good day for this all to end? Because it's got to end, and it's the final round.
Well, my question to you is, so he wet his pants.
He didn't.
No, he didn't.
He never did.
Oh, he never did. But how did your ex come up with this story?
Probably the same place he comes up with every other story. Right. He has an imagination, but it's not a very nice one. Okay, I give him that. I mean, it was blatant perjury is what it is. And then he brought my other child in on it, who also did not know that I was standing and at the school all day with officials doing this in a healthy, safe environment that had no impact whatsoever like that on my child. So now he brought her into that. So she commits perjury. Now I'm looking at two of them sideways. What do you think you're doing? Why would you do something so ugly? But that's not my circus, and they're not my monkeys. So that's not for me to handle. The judge is going to handle that part. They are in trouble when we go back to court on February 4. I know this much.
Well, okay.
Terrible.
Yeah. And has that been cleared up, that issue? Are you saying that's already been cleared up, or is that still pending?
Oh, that will come to light on that particular day. Okay. My attorney is handling that.
Okay. Gwendolyn, basically, I don't see a big problem ahead of you. I think it's going to be resolved. It's been long enough. Your husband, your ex, can't provide any accurate information. It was perjury, as you say, and lying and making up stories, and he's manipulating the courts, and they're not going to stand for that too long. And as long as you have an attorney that is at least half intelligent, I don't see any pending problems. You see, the thing we get into problems that become crazy, like they don't make any sense, but they're problems anyway, that gets into karma. And when you're dealing with a specific kind of karma, then things happen that don't seem logical because the the substance of it is coming from a past life. I don't anticipate that's going to be the case here. However, I think it has been the case to a large degree up to this point. But you see, karma has a resolution. Most karma has resolution, and you have to kind of live through it and go through it without producing new karma. I don't think you've produced a new karma. You're just getting rid of whatever karma that you've come into the world with in this particular case. So this should get wrapped up and pretty much clear it up. And I basically, rough draft form, just as for starters, I see about 75-80% that this is going to be cleared up in your favor. I don't know what that lingering shadow is. It may be minor. Let's hope it isn't. We'll try to clear it up as we're speaking and get everything back to normal. But I think that's where it's going to be stabilized.
Yeah, in terms of the date that you're going, it's 2-4, did you say?
Yes.
February 4th.
That's
a 6. Well, it isn't. It's actually, I mean, it is on that side. It's an 18-9. The whole date is an 18-9, and that happens to be, I mean, first of all, 9 is a strong number. It's a number of endurance, and 9 is the number on your transcendent side of your birthday and your year. So that is a very positive energy for you, and hopefully, you know, in terms of moving from this karmic situation, because the number is in a line, I mean, is on your transcendent side, that is a good signifier that you're moving into an energy where you're releasing that karma.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Thank you guys so, so much. I'll stay posted.
You want to say something else, Neil?
Okay. We'll keep you in our prayers and work, and do keep in touch with us when we know what's going on.
Yeah, just let us know after that date. Because we were wondering, I know there was that Tuesday at 2:30 where you met with the judge and then you didn't call. So we were really, really wondering if everything was okay.
Yes, yes. He signed it that day. I mean, they showed up. It was a lawyer, Judge Powell, but it still came down to the same thing. I got my signature. You know, he's played too many games and the judge has been seeing that. So we kind of ripped into him and gave him a little piece of what he's in for, because I'm sure going to keep coming now, but anyhow, thank you so much. Amen.
Okay.
Keep the prayers coming. I appreciate them. Thank you.
Okay,
Gwendolyn. Bye. Okay.
So our topic at hand is this isn't palmistry, is it?
It is.
No, it is. Then our topic at hand is
I don't know, your love and lifeline.
Love and lifeline.
You read poems.
Yeah, they're interesting. Yeah, it's an interesting practice.
I mean, in the whole circumference of psychic energy, when you're really a master, you can, you know, go into any branch.
True. I mean, if you're really adept at things and you have some sense of knowledge and stuff, yeah, you can approach anything under the basic energy. You know what the basic energy is? The third eye.
I know. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah. No, I was. Well, of course. I mean, if you your third eye is activated, then I mean, fully activated, and you are well versed in the language of the third eye, and you know, are adept at reading people, you know, you're going to be able to go into any sub area of,
you know, I mean,
the psychic field and be able to master it.
Once you're aware of the third eye, once you're aware of the third eye, then you can start to
apply
an educated course of getting in touch with it. But kind of think of it as an infant discovering his hands. Or you could say an elephant discovering its trunk when they're little baby elephants. But think of it as an infant discovering his hands. They know, I mean, they're obviously there and they're moving around and they're looking at them, and the first thing a baby does is it sticks its hands in its mouth and it's kind of chewing and getting the feeling, because the first thing a baby is concerned about is feeding. Comfort when it's crying and feeding. And there's very little that a baby can look at or see in the environment. They can't comprehend anything. Most of the things are kind of foggy anyways, but it's got its hands to look at. And then it starts nibbling on its hands and whatnot. And later, what a baby sometimes does when it's feeding is it will grab the breast, or it will put its hands to its side and curl its fingers, his or her fingers. And you notice sometimes they kick their feet. But this is like the beginning of the third eye. When you, and with an elephant, you know, they're moving their trunk around. They don't know what it is. It's flapping all over the place. They don't know how to work it. But this is the first suggestion of how we work with the third eye. It's somewhat connected to perceiving things. We perceive things. And that begins with a sense of curiosity. We're trying to we look at something and then we're trying to figure out what it is, how it works, is it good or bad? That code, that seed of curiosity is starting to awaken the third eye. So the third eye is somewhat based on a theory of curiosity, an accurate sense of mentality, which most professional people would say, well, that's the brain. The brain and the physical eye are having a communication, and the intervening factor would be trying to figure something out, make logic of it. And in most cases, when we're very little, when we're looking at things, we either think they're good or they're bad, they're safe or they're not safe, and we're trying to figure out. Sometimes as we get older, maybe one or two, we start to figure out that we can manipulate things and make them do things. We open the door, we pick up a toy, things like that. And then we get accustomed to it, and it becomes something we're familiar with or something we need to avoid. The third eye does the same thing. As soon as the brain and the naked eye perceive something and curiosity sets in and experimentation and exploration and discovery, the factor of the hand, the eye, and the brain starts to slowly awaken the third eye. Because the birth of the third eye is to perceive things that really
aren't there.
Visibly there. So it's
visible to the naked eye.
The naked eye does a lot of work.
Right. Because they are there. It's just that the naked eye can't perceive them. So.
Right. And then, you know, we have blind, oxymoron, but we have blind seers. You know, we have their contradictions in form, but a lot of seers, S-E-E-R-S.
Yeah, there's a famous one that died in, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
doctor,
and they're ancient,
the person's
and they go
prophecy
all the way
is, but
they go
anyway.
All the way back in time. There was
there's,
some blind, there,
one
there
famous
was a sense
one.
Of blind seer in Macbeth even. But the idea of the blind seer is a contradiction in terms, because in essence, the third eye doesn't need the physical eye. But because we have the physical eye, well, why not use it?
Well, and
so
also
we can use it.
And also being blind, I mean, shutting down that faculty, may awaken another, you know, because the eye is not being used, the physical eye isn't being used, and the third eye steps in.
Yeah.
For that person, because of the fact that the other is the physical
right.
eye is shut down.
Right. And then we get into the curiosity of discovering the third eye if there was never a history of the physical eye even being opened. If people were born blind and they grow up to be extraordinarily intuitive, what they have sometimes at hand is a history of language and identification. And they're learning, so they don't really know what things are, except maybe by touch. And God forbid, if they're deaf, it becomes even harder. K.I.E. Helen Keller. But the third eye, if there's things handy, well, the third eye will use them. or they will feed into the third eye. Hands, touch, taste, physical sight. The brain does a lot of work. So the brain and the naked eye and the degree of intelligence, with all factors included, can approach attitudes of even intuition, keen perception. We might use the term insight. But the sheer energy of peering into the astral realm, or actually not logically deducing what the future may hold, but seeing the future or seeing something that isn't there. You know, well, you're doing a reading and let's say you're advanced and you go, you know, I see a cat sitting beside you and there's a bell on a dresser. And usually what you do is you ring that bell and the cat eats food. And the person on the other line says, oh my God, yes. See, now that isn't, that is beyond the use of the physical eye, the brain, and intuition or logic. There's nothing's applied there. What's happened is that the faculties that lead up to that point, the third eye says, okay, step aside, guys, I'll take it from here. And the third eye will actually move to that place. You can also look at it as training wheels. Most of us need training wheels when we're riding a bicycle.
Or training pants.
Training pants. But let's look at training wheels. We've already discussed peeing with Gwendolyn. We don't need to get into that. We'll get
right
into the court system. But let's look at training wheels. Most kids need training wheels, but some kids just ride the bike. There they go. Third eye. Third eye is without training wheel. Training wheels is the mechanism and the support system that would otherwise be, well, not be included in the process of training. But most of us have our faculties intact. Most of us see, most of us touch, most of us can hear. But we're not excluding those people who have use of the third eye without those other faculties being, you know, in process, in work. But let's look at it just in terms of a support system. Then the third eye starts to absorb the energy. Why do we all have a third eye? Well, our basis is we all have a soul. So, you know, to the logical person or the person that is friendly to metaphysics or supernatural energy or whatever, they'll say, okay, we have a soul and we have the third eye. Thy eye is clear and all that.
Well,
so we have that third eye.
Isn't there the thought that the third eye was actually a physical part of the body and it atrophied and all
that? And all that. It's history, theories, stories, fables, everything. So that advances the theory of the third eye. But if you weren't going to use that and you were talking to an extreme skeptic, they might say, well, that's extraordinary. You just have insight, or maybe you're intuitive. We'll even go so far as to say you're intuitive. Or they might say you have a gift. But a lot of people will say, what, the third eye? No, I'm not going to use that noun. I'm not going to use that metaphor. Oh, maybe they'll say you have third sight or something. But literally, a skeptic won't say in the body is a third eye.
No.
But, of course, that's our premise. Now, that third eye absorbs the environment if it's handy. And now we're getting into the idea that as the physical eye and the intelligence, the gradual intelligence and created intelligence, learning, discovery, the process of empirical effort, that things are based upon other things and they're building. Slowly, the third eye starts to eat that. It starts to eat that and gobble it up and take it in. And then lo and behold, as it advances, and if the human being who occupies the third eye is even aware of the third eye and is using, imagine using exercises, breathing, activating the third eye, practicing prophecy and all this, it just gets stronger, like an exercise, like a muscle. You're feeding it and feeding it and feeding it. And finally, the third eye, it's like a light switch goes on. And the third eye says, I'm finally standing on my feet. I finally got this handled. And from there, there's limitations because we're human beings. But from there, it's almost like the sky's the limit. We just had a spirit knock.
We've had a couple. I don't know if you've heard. There's been various throughout the house. Your ears aren't as
you know, houses
keen
can
as mine.
Crack and make noises and things can crack. But believe me, when we exclude that when we say spirits are around because there's extraordinary things that happen around us.
Extraordinary things aside from a click. There's
very
major evidence of spirit activity in our home.
The haunted house. But now the kind of the sky's the limit. So what can you see? What can the third eye give you? It can show you the inner soul of a person. It can show it. You can look at a person, and from that person, you can see a morphing of faces, past lives, even energy fields, auras, things like that.
Well, that's why when people say, "Well, you know, I'm a medical intuitive," and that's what they do, and that's it. It's like, if you're a medical intuitive, if you're truly a medical intuitive, then you're going to be able to go into any area and be psychic, not just in the body, you know?
For the most part, you know, Edward Casey would go into his trance and talk about things in the body and stuff like that. There's a lot of psychics that will pick that up. But, you know,
well, you should be able to pick it up if you're psychic. Obviously,
not everybody can be gifted in the medical and pick up things in the body.
Right, but I'm saying if you're a medical intuitive, if you're that skilled, then you're going to be able to pick up you're going to go into other areas. I mean, you should be able to if you're that skilled to go into the human body and pick up illnesses and
intuitive doesn't necessarily will tell you, you know, you're going to have an accident skiing or, you know, how many brothers and sisters you have. Some third eye energies can be
specific
and go right to the body, and that's all they read. And I've known people who are skilled in that area, but ask them, you know, is my boyfriend going to break up? They don't know. They don't have any idea about that. So there are specific angles that the third eye you can activate, and the third eye can be limited to specific things. But what your suggestion is the third eye, once activated, should be fully activated, should be absolute. It should include everything.
I think
pathway is there. That pathway is there, but it's also in the development of karma and energy within the person.
True.
The person may have some psyche block going on, and so there's something not right.
Right, but if they're working with someone who's very skilled in identifying karma and whatever blocks one might have, then and also developing the third eye with that person, then those blocks should be, you know, not in all cases. Can you remove blocks? But
basically, but not entirely. You know, you look at a surgeon and they have fine crafted hands and they do surgery, and you say, "Oh, can you knit this thing for me?" or "Can you paint this picture?" And they go, "No." But you're so precise. You're beautiful. You know, or cosmetic, you know, a person that does the nose jobs or they form the face or in an accident. "Oh, will you paint a picture of my daughter for me?"
That's not a really great comparison because we're talking about, a different field. So, I mean, a surgeon, maybe a better comparison would be a surgeon who works on the face might not be able to go into the appendix and remove
or
them.
Or psychologically.
But anyway.
They're not great psychologists. But we can say that, yes, you're right to the extent that an activated full third eye can do many, many things, unlimited. Sometimes it is specific, and there's reasons why.
And this is why I think really opening the third eye is the best pathway to, you know, whatever field you're interested in, be it tarot card readings, or, you know, astrology, numerology, whatever subheading of the psychic field you want to go into, start with the third eye rather than going right to the cards or right to the runes or whatever it is that you're interested in. Because if the third eye isn't open, then the information is not going to be consistently accurate.
But to some extent, I mean, you can take a craft like card reading or palmistry and learn that craft and do it well. There may be severe limitations, but you can keep yourself in that little tiny comfort zone and stay there. And you can do a good reading, a decent reading, reading cards or doing a palmistry or some sort of other energy. I mean, you can do some specific reading with that and maybe even step out a little bit and use reasoning or intuition or some sense of something happening and approach it that way. The thing with the third eye, though, when it's clear, there's no mistake. There's just no mistake. The only mistake might be in the attitude of the reader's ego, or there's a severe limitation, or they're having a bad day or something. But the third eye itself, when we externalize the third eye from that internal position and we just look at the third eye, its composition is truth. Its composition is seen. Now, if there's a person who is haphazard or irregular in their reading, they're sometimes accurate and sometimes not, well, the third eye is partially exposed. And I know that sounds kind of ridiculous, but the third eye can be, it's like looking in a binocular
A partial eclipse of the moon.
A partial eclipse, or maybe your finger is overlapping the lens and you can't see properly, as a metaphor. So it's not that the lens is bad, it's that your little finger's in the way. Well, sometimes other things can get in the way of the third eye and you really need a common sense. That's why it says be whole.
Well, right.
W-H-O-L-E.
And we have a caller, but I think that getting specific information from a card reading is difficult. I think card readings tend to be more intuitive in general, in my experience, and I've had cards read many times.
I would never, having done everything in my 60 plus years, I wouldn't rely solely on a card reading or a palmistry. I rush over to the third eye and whatever other skills I have that can be compiled into that reading.
Okay. I believe this is Kate. Hello?
Hello. This is Kate.
Yeah. Hi. 922-67. How's it going?
Long time. Good.
Okay. What's going on? She's a 36 now?
I'm going on a great trip in about a week. So anything about the trip or any like kind of spiritual growth or things that could change for me on this trip.
Okay.
Well, within the trip itself, is there broadly speaking, is there potentially any view of mountains?
Many, yes. All mountains.
Okay. All mountains. You know, because I could have said ocean or the tropics.
Of course.
But
you hit it.
I'm seeing mountains. All right.
Yes.
So now here's the thing, Kate. And here, let's get into a little bit of a believe it or not, Ripley's believe it or not. Those mountains that you're going to be viewing in a past life, you were buried in those mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go to the mountains, sometimes people climb mountains and they pause, they stop and they go, God, I got a weird feeling. And they don't know what it is. They stop and they pause, they ponder, they feel something. They're stepping on the place where they were once buried, they once lived, they once traded. You know, in a past life, not just the mountains, but you had a companion. See, and that companion was a donkey.
Ah,
yeah.
not a.
And you know, the attitude of that, you know, when you get into the Andes and the mountain ranges and things like that, a lot of those animals are there. Now, let's say you're not in that part of the world, but a lot of mountain ranges mimic other mountain ranges.
And right, if you're on the same latitude, especially, yeah.
Yeah, in the, you know, South American things, but in the attitude of the migration of human beings, a lot of people migrated and moved from mountain to mountain, from continent to continent, especially when there were explorers. And I for one, Kate, believe that you later were involved in a lifetime where there was exploration. It's almost like Vasquez. It's like Spanish, you know, the mountain ranges. It's, and there's colorful, like Serapis. And just hand woven materials that have beauty and shape and form, you know, there were just a lot of that energy.
So
there's also seems to be another companion with you, even two.
Going on the trip.
Yeah.
So, Kate, tell us a little bit more about your trip.
Yeah, it's New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Yeah. And the South Island is very rugged and mountainous, and I'll be in all those kind of, and oceans, you know, and dolphins and whales, and so it'll be
wonderful,
how long all that stuff.
How long is your trip?
3 weeks.
I wrote down 3 weeks. So
there you go.
Yeah, but, and how many people are you going with?
Different people. I have half the time with friends and half the time with family.
So are you traveling there alone and then meeting people?
Meeting people, yes.
Meeting people there. So there are more people. There's not exactly someone who's like leaving the SFO with you, and you're not sitting on a plane with someone, but you're meeting other people there. So there must be something significant about what you're picking up.
Are you planning to explore the mountains or do any mountain climbing?
Yeah, definitely.
Uh-huh. Well, even though we didn't specify New England, that's okay. I mean, New Zealand. Okay. We didn't specify that, but the imagery of mountains certainly, and the ruggedness certainly takes a large part of it.
And there's indigenous people in New Zealand as well.
Yes, Maori. Yeah. I'd like to go to Maori sites. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know why, but there, somewhere around you, there seems to be a wedding ceremony. It could be a friend, a relative, but there's a wedding thing, or I'm stumbling into a past life, which we won't be able to immediately validate, and I'm getting swept up into that pool. But is there any wedding planned or any wedding theme or?
Mm-mm.
No.
Not that I know of.
Have you been, I mean, any weddings that you've been to recently?
Mm-mm. No.
No. Well, when you're over there, if you do happen to be in New Zealand and without your prompting it, the word wedding comes up, or marriage, or they got married, somebody says something, that would be a clue on the link to what we're saying.
And likely, I would surmise it will, probably.
Also, is it your intention, or was it your intention to buy anything, such as a little ring or anything while you're there?
It sounds like something I would do. I mean, I always...
Okay. It sounds like so.
Try and get jewelry from where I travel. Yeah.
Do you ever get jewelry from where you travel?
Yes. Yes, always.
Okay, so we'll attach it to that. Real quickly, is there anything in New Zealand, to your knowledge, that would involve donkeys?
You know, now that sounds more like South America to me, but
yeah, it does.
There's a lot of sheep there. But a sheep companion,
I know.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know yet, but I don't know if we helped you, but the illustrations that we've provided have some sense of validation. And furthermore, the trip seems to be very exciting. Keep your eyes and ears open. That kind of thing. Unless you have real quickly a specific question you wanted to now present to us about the trip.
I guess I'm hoping during the trip to find some clarity of what to do when I come back. So I'm hoping to do in the mountains to do some quiet meditations about this year and clarifying my goals for this year.
Right. Did you already propose to yourself that you were going to meditate in the mountains?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So that connects more. That one is more vitally connected to our vision, our pre-existing vision that we had when we first were discussing the mountains. So there is going to be a connection there. If I were you, I would be impressing upon my brain that I have lived here before. I've died here.
Okay.
I want to connect to my bones, my past life. You might want to, when you return, to talk about, write a book about traveling to one's past life origins and what the immediate experiences are.
Okay.
Okay, Kate, well, have a great trip. And like our new page, we have a new page for the show, so we'd really appreciate it if you liked it. It's Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. You can find us there on Facebook.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. So on with the topic.
Well, so
on
we're
with the
talking
discussion.
About, you know, the way that this third eye is.
Yeah.
We're
procrastinating on the plan top, but it's spontaneous. It's good to have spontaneous discussion.
What's the topic?
Shutting down procrastination. But it doesn't matter. We can change that and we can do that on Friday because we're really, you know, we're discussing the third eye, which is a vitally important topic to discuss.
Exactly. I mean, third eye, I mean, it's funny because you're trying to separate, well, is it my imagination or is my third eye actually feeding me an image?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've had things in my experience opening the third eye that I've been totally mystified by. Most recently, been things moving out of my, I'm seeing things moving in my peripheral vision that are not moving.
Right. Well, what do you do in the physical world? Is it my imagination or is that a tank down in over the horizon and you walk towards it and you discover it is a tank because you've made the steps and you're there, you're looking at it, you identify it. It's the same thing with the third eye. You have to check out what you think you see and see if there's validation.
Right. And seeing also another thing that's been happening is I've looked for things that are not there. I'm looking, you know, in a very small area and they are not there. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, they're suddenly appear in that area. So in having these experiences, obviously I'm checking in with you because you're guiding me in the third eye opening process. And you have validated that these are indeed things that occur when you're in this process of activating the third eye.
Now let's look at the discrepancies between the third eye accuracy and the third eye. It's sort of near the topic, but not on it. So I'm seeing mountains. Yes, she's going to mountains. I'm going more towards South America.
Okay,
Andes.
So I want to say something too. I wrote down South America before you started talking. So when she was talking, I wrote down South America. But I may have been picking up on your energy with the South America. I don't know what I was picking up on.
And
but
I
obviously
don't know.
She didn't.
New Zealand.
You
know, the landmass. I'm not sure because continents separated. And so there used to be a vast migration, and then the continents separated, oceans and things like that. But no, New Zealand and South America
are not in the same place.
Area.
But
the crucial thing is in a situation like that, if I can come to my own defense, If there's mountains and she's seeing mountains, she identifies that. And yes, mountains was a place she was intended to ponder and think about. I could be picking up one, the accuracy of the mountain. But then when it gets to New Zealand from the South America or the Andes, I may be falling into a past life that has an extension back to that area, which ultimately leads to New Zealand, because there could have been. Now, someone can say, oh, well, that's a cop out.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it is. But maybe it isn't. Perhaps it isn't. And if it isn't, what we have linking to this theory is that she wasn't going specifically to an ocean. She's going.
Well, and she wasn't going
to
like exactly. She wasn't going to New York City.
Yeah, New York City or a city or something, or Berlin or
I mean, Europe has mountains too, but like
specifically
a place where there's no mountainous regions.
She's going to a very ancient natural environment. Well, okay, so we get into that zone, and we're also looking at the limitations of time and things like that. We're doing radio readings, but the third eye, when the setting is right, and it's often been right, the third eye will not let you down, and it moves to that area. So. Now let's kind of move a little over to procrastination.
Okay. Well, do you really want to? I mean, or should we just?
Well, we're not adhered to having to
be specific in one specific area. Okay.
No, we're not. But if we incorporate procrastination to our topic, you know, some of us are lazy enough not to activate energy, especially if the third eye is, if a reader is telling something to somebody and that person has either paid for a reading or not paid for a reading or just seeking guidance, and then they don't follow up on it.
And
the reader later says, oh, did you do that? No, I haven't done that yet.
Well, yeah. And then you get into, well, that's tricky because sometimes people seek advice and they're not committed to necessarily following the person's advice that is dispensing it. So that's, you know, going to someone for a one-time reading, for instance, you know, that person may not follow advice that is given in that reading. But more often, if someone is engaged with someone who is guiding them in their lives and then doesn't follow advice, I would say that's a worse case of, you know, procrastination or laziness or not listening.
Again, it's a redundancy, but because it doesn't seem to make sense, it's an overlapping of a term. But when you are proactive, I mean, if you're active, you're active. Why do you have to say proactive? What is that context? What is that subcontext of prefix is that perfection, that professionalism, that attitude that you're just not active, but you're active, meaning that you get things done immediately. So the immediate effect is that it's fresh. You know, oh, I don't like this bread. I bought this bread and it said fresh. And it doesn't taste fresh anymore. Well, it's been sitting it's fresh bread, organic bread, and it's been sitting on your table for 3 days. So you pay the penalty of wasting time. You're not going to, things break down. So if someone says, you know, you need to do this, you need to get this done, you need to go here, you need to talk to this person, whatever the case is, if you wait, the organic chemistry that the third eye reveals can actually break down, and you can lose the opportunity of otherwise gaining success or having something done that is in your desire.
Right. So when you're working with someone that you trust and has proven his or her accuracy in their third eye visions through whatever means, then if you're seeking their guidance consistently, follow through on their advice, because the advice that is given can, if the procrastination happens, then, you know, the visions can deteriorate.
They can deteriorate. And, you know, it's the same in anything. We're talking about the medical field. Oh, you should get that checked right away. You have this test done. Fill this cavity. you know, if you wait, you in the organic world, if you wait, obviously it can be, unless you're lucky or you're given a window, you pay the penalty. In a reading, for instance, I can say to somebody, oh, you need to do this. Do I need to do it right away? No, you could really wait a month. Well, that's still following a direction.
Right.
But if you say, no, do it right away. Do it this right away. Don't procrastinate. Then that be. Procrastination is basically, the seed of procrastination is psychological. We procrastinate not because we are handicapped by something. We are prisoner to our own psyche, our own psychological nature. So to me, in my theory of things, procrastination is purely psychological. Sometimes you can merit it with or attach it to something logical. Well, you just couldn't do it. I understand.
Right. You can only get so much done in a day, for example.
Right. I told you to go and clean out your storage. I know. On the way, a car hit me. I broke four bones and I'm in the hospital. Oh, you're just procrastinating. No, you wouldn't say it then. There's logical reasons that can attach itself to some sense of action. But if you say, I couldn't, and you're blah, 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 and there's no real reason, that essence of procrastination is destructive to one's path. And I mean destructive, that term.
Okay, so we can continue this on Friday, Neil, but we are out of time. So we appreciate our callers today and our listeners. Thank you for joining us, and we will hear from you, hopefully, on Friday. Bye-bye.